This is Radio Times. I'm Artie Moss-Cohen. Bald is in. Just take a look at the shiny heads of those macho movie stars, Bruce Willis, Michael Chiklis, and Vin Diesel, or those super athletes, Michael Jordan and Andre Agassi, or those successful CEOs, Jeffrey Katzenberg and Jeffrey Bezos. Today on the show, we're going to talk about going bald, and we begin our conversation with Albert Manis, whose study found that bald men have certain advantages at the workplace. They're seen as more dominant than men with a full head of hair. We were intrigued when we read about this in the Wall Street Journal, and we asked him to join us on Radio Times. He's a lecturer at the Wharton School of the University of Pennsylvania, and the study is titled Shorn Scalps and Perceptions of Male Dominance, published in the Journal of Social, Psychological, and Personality Science. And Albert Manis, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. And since we're on the radio, you must describe, or I should say to our listeners that you have a shaved head, something that were proactive about. You decided to go bald.
Right. About 10 years ago, I started losing my hair in my early 30s. And I started just with clippers, taking them shorter. But eventually, I just went with the razor and went completely bald. And I got a lot of positive feedback. And that's why I kept it. But I thought the more interesting result was how strangers approached me or actually didn't approach me. So strangers were a little bit more standoffish in my perception, and in some cases even deferential. So all that was a little bit surprising to me. And that was sort of the motivation for the study in the first place.
And I do want to get to the study. Was that a dramatic and bold move for you to do, to decide to shave your head and go completely bald?
No, I was pretty comfortable with it. So it didn't take an extremely courageous choice on my part to do that. I think that will differ from man to man and how much of a choice. For me, I had been gradually going that way. The razor
going
was just...
Going bald, you mean?
Yeah. The razor was just kind of completing what Mother Nature had started. And... And frankly, I preferred the look to the natural hair loss look, so I kept it.
Well, let's talk about your research, because I know it's gotten a lot of press, I think, especially because it appeared in the Wall Street Journal. It's based on perceptions of bald men
workplace. That's right. So what it's based on, I'll basically describe the studies. And I had people, adults and across the nation, rate photographs of men who are dressed in suits, men primarily in their late 20s to early 40s. And some of the men were pictured with their natural full heads of hair. Some were pictured authentically as men with shaved heads. That was one study. In another study, what I did is I took some of the men who had full heads of hair and I actually Photoshopped their hair out. Because we want to control for other differences that may be correlated with the choice to shave your head.
Just how somebody looks.
That's right. So maybe there's something else about them that's correlated with the shaved head. So in these photographs, what I did is I just Photoshopped their hair out. So some people would see the men with their authentic hair. Some would see with the Photoshopped pictures with their inauthentic hair. And that's where I saw some really large differences. For example, in that study, they were viewed as about an inch taller. The men were viewed as an inch taller and about 13% stronger when viewed with the shaved head photos.
Picking up on that, I understand the taller part. The stronger meaning they could lift heavy objects.
They could lift. I asked them to estimate what this man could bench press, basically. Mm-hmm. And the men with shaved heads, they were viewed as being able to bench press about 20 pounds more weight.
Now, do those results, did that surprise you?
Oh, certainly. That was the most surprising. It's one thing, I think, to just rate somebody as forceful and assertive and dominant, which are some of the adjectives I use to describe these men, to actually infer that they're a little taller, to
yes.
infer that they're stronger. Although that might be correlated, that was very surprising.
What do you think it tells us? Are you still trying to figure that out?
I'm still trying to figure out. I think part of the explanation lies in, I speculate on a few in the paper, one of which is just cultural stereotypes. So in U.S. culture in particular, the shaved head look is associated with very traditionally masculine professions, such as the military and firefighting, police officers, et cetera. And Hollywood action heroes also contribute to that look, so Bruce Willis, for example. And then increasingly, over the last 10 years, you've seen a lot of athletes take to the look. Mm-hmm. So you can think of starting, Michael Jordan is probably the most famous example, Brian Urlacher of the Chicago Bears. So to the extent those are all very masculine images that people have, I think that would probably contribute to the idea that the shaved head involves masculinity. And so that's where you get the heightened strength issues.
But as you mentioned, when you decided to shave your head and to go completely bald, you found that there were different reactions to you.
I did.
I don't know if people thought you were taller and stronger than you were. But
yeah, I don't know. To me, it was just more of, it was just interesting to see how strangers behaved. And I wasn't sure what that meant. And so that was the motivation for this study. In the workplace, I mean, I'm in a school of management. And so we study issues of power and status in organizations. And so this seemed like the relevant dimension to look at.
But does it say to us that if you want to get ahead in the world and you're a man, shave your head?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think these effects, even in any case, are just going to work on the margins. Mm-hmm. Obviously, other things you do are going to be more important to your success. But a couple points. The first is, one of the downsides I found in the shave look is, in general, you look older and you're less attractive looking compared to men with shaved heads. Compared to men with full heads of hair. So whatever dominant or masculinity you may gain by shaving your head, it's going to be offset if you have a full head of hair by your lowered attractiveness. But this isn't the case if you're visibly balding. Mm-hmm. In that case, it's almost all upside because there's lots of evidence about this prior to my research, clinical evidence about the effects of natural hair loss in men, its effect on their self-esteem, their body image, and on how other people view them. Mm-hmm. They're generally viewed as less assertive, older, and less attractive. So compared to natural hair loss and the visibly balding look, the shave look is positive on a number of dimensions, including leadership potential.
And there's something about something like 35% of men have male pattern baldness, the idea of losing hair on the top, and then you get that sort of ring around the bottom of the head.
That's right. So, I mean, by the age 50, half of all men will experience that to some degree. Right. And some men start experiencing it as early as their early 20s.
But it seems like you also found that those men that had that, not the full head of hair and not the shaved head, but the one in between, that they were seen as less dominant?
Yes. So in the study where I deliberately looked at natural hair loss, that was, I didn't use photographs in that one. So I basically just had people evaluate a man described either with just a full head of hair, thinning hair, or a shaved head. So no photographs, very pallid stimuli for the to be perfectly honest, but the man, when he was described with thinning hair, was rated least favorably on almost every attribute, from dominance, confidence, masculinity, attractiveness, leadership potential.
Just saying the word thinning hair, almost derisively.
It conjures up the George Costanza type of image from Seinfeld, and that's what leads to these perceptions. And that coheres with a lot of prior evidence about the effects of natural hair loss on male perceptions.
And that's Albert Manis. He's a lecturer at the Wharton School here in Philadelphia at the University of Pennsylvania. And we're talking about a new study of his that's gotten a fair amount of attention. The study is titled Shorn Scalps and Perceptions of Male Dominance. It was published in the Social, Psychological, and Personality Science Journal. Also, there was an article recently in the Wall Street Journal. That's what we saw. We were interested and invited him to join us on Radio Times. And we have calls coming in at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Of course, we want to hear from the bald men or the haired men in our audience, or those even with thinning hair, what you make of this study. And again, 1-888-477-9499. As I was reading your study and also about your study, I was thinking about Samson, you know, this notion of having this full head of hair, meaning strength and masculinity, maybe even, you know, height, being taller.
Mm-hmm.
This kind of throws that on its head.
So to speak. Yeah, it's an irony. And it's one of the paradoxical aspects of this is that given the symbolic value that, you know, we place on hair, not only through time, but across cultures as well. I mean, it's almost every culture places such a value on hair. It seems a bit ironic that shaving it could project masculinity. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, one author has written that the idea is that by shaving, men become symbolically more virile and alive, because they're basically saying, I don't need to rely on this classic symbol of power to survive in this world, that I have qualities that compensate for mm-hmm. for hair, and that may be the case.
Being sort of proactive about what's happening on the top of their head, so to speak.
That's right. That's right. Trying to perhaps signal in something about themselves that they don't have to conform with kind of societal emphasis on appearance to project their masculinity.
It's interesting when you walk around and, you know, trying to figure out, who's wearing a toupee, or even there's the comb over, the idea of taking what oftentimes appears like strands of hair and just combing them off over the top of your head, which I've always thought actually focuses more on someone's head than if it were just bald or shaved bald.
Right. I mean, I don't want to be critical.
No, obviously, me neither.
These are all personal choices, and for plenty of men, hair loss doesn't bother them at all, and more power to them. But you know, clearly by the market that's out there for hair restoration products and for all the R&D that's going on a cure for baldness, a lot of men do care about this.
Right.
And so this is one thing they can think about. If they're not attracted to those other alternatives, they could at least experiment with this look. If their friends and family like it, then maybe that'll give them the confidence to use it more permanently.
It's interesting. I mean, we saw the article. We called you up. I know you've been inundated with phone calls. Are you surprised about the reaction to this study?
I am. I knew
maybe
it would
be shocked
a little bit. Yeah, I knew it would be interesting to a lot of people, but I didn't expect it to take off like this. Some of it, I think, is because there's been a little bit of mischaracterization that I've claimed that I have empirical evidence about bald men and their success in the workplace, and that's not at all what my study speaks to. But yeah, to the extent that even my modest findings are gaining this much of attention, it's been a surprise.
Are you going to do some more research? Obviously, you've tapped into something, and it sounds like there's more to discover about this perception of especially for men and bald men in the workplace.
I think it's interesting. I don't know if I'll do much more with shaved heads in particular, but I am drawn to the general idea that there are nonverbal behaviors that we can gauge in, or changes to our appearance that may communicate dominance and power and status in organizations. There's other research on women, for example, that are looking at just the act of engaging in some kind of unconventional behavior is seen as status enhancing, because it's viewed as a confident and assertive statement of independence. So, maybe I'll look at in other respects.
Well, let's take a very short break, and we'll get back to our conversation talking with Albert Manis today on Radio Times. He's a lecturer at the Wharton School of the University of Pennsylvania, and his study, which was published in the Journal of Social, Psychological, and Personality Science, is titled Shorn Scalps and Perceptions of Male Dominance, as we've been talking about, picked up by a number of publications, including the Wall Street Journal, which is where we saw it. And he joins us on Radio Times. We have another guest waiting in the wings and a full bank of calls at 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Chemical Heritage Foundation, Library, Museum, Center for Scholars, supports WHYY. CHF, together with the Philadelphia Artists Collective, will present a reading of Ben Jonson's classic farce, The Alchemist. In this raucous adventure, the allure of gold makes it easy for a ragtag band of con artists to dupe a town of greedy nitwits. Monday, October 8th at 7 p.m., CHF's new exhibit, The Alchemical Quest, will also be on display. More information at chemheritage.org/events.
I'm Mike and Scott. Listener support is vital to WHYY, and we'll be asking for yours during our upcoming membership campaign. But the October buyback is your chance to help give us a head start. Make a pledge during our October buyback, and for every 750 donations we receive, you'll buy back one day. This means one less day of pledge and one more day of news without membership breaks. Do your part at whyy.org/support. Thank you.
Independence Blue Cross is proud to support WHYY. Independence Blue Cross is dedicated to transforming healthcare to make a better coordinated system that is built around you. They're committed to leading the way to focus on preventing illness rather than reacting to it, pioneering new ways to pay healthcare professionals based on the quality of care. and using technology to update your medical information electronically so everyone can be informed. Further details online at IBX.com. Independence Blue Cross, changing the game.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane. I've been talking with Albert Manis about his new study on baldness and dominance in the workplace. And joining us now is George Cotsarellis. He's the chair of the dermatology department at the University of Pennsylvania. He's also on the scientific advisory board of Follica, and that's a company based on a patent from his research at Penn. And Dr. Cotsarellis, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Hello, my pleasure.
You've been listening in, listening as Albert Manis has been talking about his research, finding that there are certain advantages to being bald. Does that fit with your research?
Well, I don't really study those kinds of psychological aspects.
No,
of
I know
balding.
That. Yeah.
But I do see patients with hair loss, and I can tell you that most of the patients I see would really... don't view that as an option as far as shaving their heads go. Most of the patients that I see are actually women, so obviously that's not going to apply there. My impression of what I heard was that, historically, I think hair is always associated, long hair and beautiful long hair is associated with women. It's sort of a female characteristic. So it doesn't really surprise me that if you sort of remove that mm-hmm. characteristic that you become sort of hyper-masculine in appearance. But that's just my...
That's your take. Fair enough. Well, let me talk a little bit about your research. You have been looking at why, I guess, men and women go bald. What do we know now?
Right. So if you think about the hair follicle, that's the little structure in your scalp that makes the hair, what has to happen for someone to go bald is that follicle has to change. And in male pattern baldness, the change that occurs is the follicle itself becomes very small or miniaturized. So originally it was making a hair that was 100 microns in diameter, and it was growing for years. After a while, that follicle becomes so small that the hair that's produced is essentially microscopic. So if you were to actually biopsy someone's bald scalp and look under the microscope, you would see tiny little hair follicles there, and they would be making tiny hairs. So that's really the problem. We know that testosterone in men is required for that miniaturization to happen. So if you were to block testosterone, that would block that conversion of a big follicle to a little one. If you block it in a man who's going bald, it'll prevent further baldness, and it may actually reverse a little bit of it, but it doesn't reverse baldness that's already been present for a long time.
Is it genetic? I mean, the fact that the people do go bald, is can you find that in family history?
Yeah, absolutely. It's definitely transmitted through generations, and it's not just on the mother's side. That's kind of a myth. It can be from either side of the family. So if you have a family history, you're more likely to go bald. Doesn't mean you will, but it's you're just at a higher risk, I guess.
Are there things people can do to prevent baldness or maybe even not do to prevent baldness?
So if we're just talking about male pattern baldness, and there are a lot of different causes of hair loss, but if we're just talking about male pattern baldness, that is really genetically predetermined. There are treatments for it, certainly. There are two FDA-approved treatments for men. One is topical minoxidil. That's a drug you put on twice a day topically. And the other is a pill that you take called finasteride, and that blocks the effect of testosterone. So both of those will help to maintain your hair over the long run, and they may even reverse a little bit of the baldness at first. But they're much better at maintaining what you have rather than regrowing a lot.
And I was reading that something like 35%. I don't know if it's men or of men and women have male pattern baldness.
Yeah, as I think Albert mentioned, I think 50% of men by the time they're 50 have some degree of male pattern baldness. And 30% of women by the time they're 50 also mm-hmm. have female pattern hair loss.
And is it the same route with testosterone and these shrinking hair follicles?
We know much less about the women who lose their hair. Definitely the follicles become smaller in women as well, but we don't really know whether that's testosterone-mediated or caused by testosterone.
What about transplants?
Yeah, that's also an option. That's a third option for men and women, where essentially you're moving hair from the back of the scalp, where it's generally thick and it stays thick, to the top of the scalp in the front. And what's kind of interesting is when you move the hair, it retains its donor characteristics, or it retains the characteristics it had from where from the back of the scalp. So it once it's grafted to the front, the hair that's produced is nice and big and stays.
Are there certain medical conditions that can also lead to baldness, anemia or chemical imbalances, things like that?
Sure. Those will cause hair follicles to go into a resting stage, and then the hair itself can fall out. Those don't really change the size of the follicle like we talked about at the beginning. So if you have a lot of hair shedding and there's hair, you know, coming out in excessive amounts, that can be a sign of many different problems, including iron deficiency, nutritional disorders, thyroid, other endocrine, hormonal abnormalities. And so that's very important to be checked out if that's happening.
And final question, do we lose hair as we age, generally speaking?
So there have been some studies that looked at women, and even those that don't really have this, what we call female pattern hair loss, the overall volume of the hair does tend to go down after menopause. So I actually see women who throughout their whole life had very thick hair, you know, they were sort of at the 95th percentile for hair, and then they may drop down to the 80th percentile in their 40s and 50s. And for them, it's a huge change. But when somebody looks at them for the first time, they wouldn't think they had hair loss. So it does occur, and it can be it's pretty significant.
Do you? I asked Albert Manis this question, but do you have a full head of hair, Dr. Katsaralis?
Well, my 8-year-old reminds me that I'm losing some hair on the back
right?
of my head. Yeah, but I wouldn't want to shave it because I'm already 6'5", so I don't want to look any taller.
That's interesting. That's interesting. Well, thank you so much for joining us today in Radio Times.
All right, thank you.
You're welcome. That's George Katsaralis, chair of the Dermatology Department at the University of Pennsylvania. And again, Albert Manis staying with us for the next 10 minutes or so. We do want to get some callers in at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Any comments or thoughts as you were listening to George Katsaralis talking?
No, it was very interesting, particularly his theory on why the shaving may be somewhat hyper-masculine and that the hair is actually a feminine quality. I hadn't thought about it like that. I mean, we do have examples from history. If you think about Samson, for example, in the Bible, in which removing his hair removed his source of power and strength. Yeah. So I'm not sure that's completely the explanation, but definitely worth considering.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting how, I mean, hair is so... This is going to sound really stupid, but hair is so important.
In this society, I would say that's fair.
Yeah. Well, let me get some callers, and we have a full bank of calls, including, it looks like, Ben from Mount Airy. Ben, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hey, Marty. How
are
you doing?
Good. How are you?
You've had a lot of great shows over the year, but I don't think anything more important than Baldwin.
Of course not. Of course not, Ben.
Near and dear to my heart. I've been bald since I was 17 years old. I'm 35 now. I was 16 years old and I started noticeably bald, and I said, I'm just going to beat Mother Nature to the punch here, and I took it all off. Most people at the time, I was a senior in high school, thought that I had cancer, and so there was like sort of this can't talk about it for a while, and then when they realized I was fine, it became sort of a joke, but... you know, what I've noticed over the years, and maybe it's because where I grew up outside of Reading, Pennsylvania, and there was actually a large contingent of skinheads and neo-Nazis out there.
Oh, wow.
And I am by no means someone to fear. If you saw me coming down the street, you wouldn't be afraid. I'm a small man. And but I noticed when I was out and like at a club or something like that, people would actually just part the ways for me. If a guy would bump into me that, you know, that would probably squash me on any other day of the week, would actually say, oh, excuse me, I'm sorry. And I thought that was really an interesting thing of your guest talking about the dominance of bald men.
Oh, Ben, that's fascinating. I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Let me give Albert Manis a chance to respond. He said several interesting things.
Yeah, the fact that he started at such a young age, I think, is definitely unusual. I've talked to some interviews in the UK, like BBC, and I think the connotation or the connection between a shaved head and the skinhead culture is much stronger over there. So I'm not sure the positive aspects that I found about it would necessarily hold in other cultures. I think this is a very the study was done in the U.S., and so it's the cultural association of figures in the U.S. that relate to this. But definitely.
Ben found people parting, you know, as he said, he's a small, bald-headed guy, and people parting as he maybe walked through a bar or something like that.
Right. I don't know if I ever saw people part for me, but similar experience. Yeah.
He also mentioned the fact, which I think is interesting, that his high school friends thought he might have cancer. Mm. And I know of a number of people that went, if they've had a friend who's lost their hair through cancer, shave their head in a kind of bald solidarity.
Mm, interesting. Yeah, I think especially they would notice that for him because of his age was so young.
Right.
It was very unusual behavior for that.
Ben, thanks for calling into Radio Times. Let me get Sebastian from Trenton to join us. And Sebastian, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi. I just wanted to say, kind of for me, going bald actually changed my life. I had hair down to the middle of my or past my shoulders. I would walk into a bar, girls would run up to me and run their hands through my hair. It was great. But as I started losing my hair, that attention got less and less. I started cutting it short, and then eventually I shaved it. Once I started doing that, my whole perception of life kind of changed. I wasn't out there looking for what people thought of me or what people or how I can impress people. I started looking at myself and started changing my life and started thinking about things that I wanted to do. And I went on at the age of 42 to join Army Special Forces. I went through their tryouts. I made it. I went through their school. I made it. So for me, it actually changed or I can say saved my life.
Sebastian, that's fascinating. And I should say, Albert, you served some time in the military as well.
I did. I right out of college, I spent 5 years in the military. Mm-hmm. That's a really interesting finding. I do think it speaks to one of the explanations I talk about in the paper is that the lack of hair makes you less concerned about your appearance. Mm-hmm. And so men who are willing, people infer a certain confidence in a man who's willing to take that step because, hair does play such a value mm-hmm. in society.
Sebastian, thanks for the call to Radio Time. Just one open line at 1-888-477-9499. Let me get, looks like Emily from Upper Bucks County to join us. Emily, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, great topic. Thanks.
Whoops. Go ahead. Are we with you, Emily?
I apologize. Okay, no, I'm good.
Okay, go ahead.
Thank you. I just wanted to say I work with a gentleman who has the gray ring, and he is in his early 50s, and I tell him every day to shave because I know that he would look so much better. My boyfriend is bald. He shaves, and he looks great. He embraces it. He is confident. He rocks it really well, and he looks sexy, and I know that a few days, like if my boyfriend doesn't shave for his head for a few days and the hair starts coming in, he gets the ring and it looks gray and he looks a lot older. I mean, he still looks good, but he looks a lot older. For those men out there, shave your head, you'll shave 10, 15, 20 years off.
Emily, thanks for your call to Radio Times. Albert, I don't know if you agree with that or not, which is basically a call to men with that ring to shave it off.
Well, it's a man's personal choice. I think there are two effects. Number one, if you've lost a lot of your hair already, shaving obscures the extent. I mean, people know that you're shaving to maybe cover up your baldness, but you do obscure extent to an extent. To an extent, the level of that baldness. The second issue is, the caller brings up, is gray hair. So shaving also removes gray hair, and gray hair is obviously an indicator of age as well. So by obscuring how much hair you've lost and by removing evidence of your aging life, then you can take some years off.
I know some people that fit that definition. I mean, to me, it's always about style and just, you know, whatever you look like, however you do it, if you do it with confidence, you probably look pretty good.
Mm-hmm. I think so.
Let me get, it looks like Jen from University City to join us on Radio Times. And Jen, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I was hoping our guest could comment on my boyfriend's experience. He was a teacher and went back to school in his early 40s to go into nonprofit management, and he has a shaved head. He had been going bald and shaved it, and I think he's found it actually to be a little bit more of an impediment and a barrier to getting a position in what's more of a female, potentially dominated field. You know, he's a white male at that age with a shaved head. I think he just might think it actually is more of sending a message of almost like a threat of potentially, I don't know, power or what. And I was just wondering if maybe our guest had a comment on that.
Oh, that's interesting, Jen. What do you think, Albert?
So I think that's fair. I think probably the perception is very similar, that he may be a dominant type of figure and a very masculine influence in maybe a workplace that's not looking for that type of managerial or contributor role. And so depending on where you're going to be trying to be successful, it may also affect your choice to do this.
And so depending, I guess, where you work and how they view appearance or even men or women.
I think so, right. I mean, I think that applies to lots of, you know, different issues, your clothing you wear, the jewelry you wear, et cetera. A lot of that's going to vary with the type of workplace that you're in.
Have you found, as a result of what you did, but also that your research, that you are observing people, you know, in their natural habitat, you know, and how people respond, are sort of how people respond to those people who are bald, essentially, and living in the world?
Yeah, it's hard to observe from other people what they think of others. I just have my own experience and then basically the evidence that I have from these studies,
right,
and a lot of anecdotal evidence like we're hearing today,
right,
that leads me to think I'm onto something here.
but you're interested in perceptions in the workplace, I mean, more broadly speaking.
Right. So we talk about, I study management, and so we talk about issues of power and status in the workplace. And a lot of those come with position, resources. Some of those are related to appearance,
right,
but some of those are fixed features like your height, et cetera. But there is a growing literature on nonverbal behavior and self-expression that allows you to assert a level of status and power in the workplace as well. And this fits into that.
We're almost out of time here, but I'm wondering whether even just the shape of someone's head, I mean, if you have a bald head, you can see what people's heads are shaped like, and they're not all the same.
No, they're not, and some men are definitely concerned that if they shave their heads, they won't have a head for the shaved,
right,
look, and that may be true. The beauty about this is that if they choose to grow their hair out again, they can always do that.
Yeah.
Like, it's not an irreversible choice.
Well, on that note, Albert Manis, thank you so much for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
It's been a pleasure for us as well. Clearly, a lot of interest in your research. He's a lecturer at the Wharton School of the University of Pennsylvania, author of this new study titled Shorn Scalps and Perceptions of Male Dominance, published in the Journal of Social, Psychological, and Personality Science, and joined us here in our Philadelphia studios. We're going to call up to Sherry Creek in just a moment or two. She works at a hair salon in New York. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Morristown Friends School proudly supports WHYY and is hosting an admissions open house on Sunday, October 21st at 2 p.m. Founded in 1785, Morristown Friends offers rigorous academics coupled with a spiritual and ethical education program for students in preschool through grade 12. More information, multimedia, and all open house dates, including information about Morristown Friends admissions open house on Sunday, October 21st at 2 p.m., can be found online at mfsopportunities.org.
Everything we do and feel can be considered a habit. Research tells us that while habits, especially negative ones, seem to drive us, by understanding them, we can take the reins and transform our lives. I'm Dan Gottlieb, and on the next Voices in the Family, Creatures of Habit. Today at noon, here on WHYY FM.
Delaware Theater Company on the Wilmington Riverfront supports WHYY and presents The Outgoing Tide by Bruce Graham, October 10th to 28th. Starring Michael Learned, Ian Lithgow, and Peter Strauss, The Outgoing Tide offers surprising humor as it explores the ebb and flow of a family dynamic. Gunner has an unorthodox plan to secure his family's future, but meets with resistance from his wife and grown son. For tickets, 302-594-1100 or DelawareTheater.org.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss Cohen. We've been talking about going bald, and now we want to get a unique perspective on what hair loss means for women. And Sherry Creek joins us. She's a hair salon manager, has lost her hair twice to chemotherapy. She's manager at Sharon Durham Color at Sally Hershberger Salon, which is in New York City. And Sherry Creek, nice to have you with us Radio Times.
Thank you.
Can you describe your salon to us?
It's a very upscale salon, you know, very successful people, a fair amount of celebrities, people who are established, you know, we sort of follow the private school schedule that people go away to their second or third or fourth homes during vacations. You know, it's very, in New York, it's very well known.
Well, we were reading about you in the New York Times, and you know, I'm sorry to hear that you've had cancer two times and have also undergone chemotherapy. What has been the effect of chemotherapy on your head of hair?
Well, I've lost it twice, and you know, the first time you're just sort of in shock moving through the process. The second time, that was the first thing that I cried about. I said to my husband, I don't know if I can do it again. Right. I don't know if I can lose my hair again. You know, it's difficult.
Well, certainly it's difficult, and having the cancer diagnosis and obviously the chemotherapy, which I know is no fun. But losing your hair the first time, as you said, it was difficult. How did you handle that?
Well, it's hard for me to remember the first time as much. Because I was in very intensive chemo, and then I had radiation. And the first time through, I really wore scarves to cover it up. I was more isolated then. I wasn't working. I bought a wig, and I put it on twice. And the two times I put it on, my dogs growled at me and barked. And I
wasn't
said,
their mommy, right?
Yeah, I said to my husband, they either think I have an animal on my head or they just don't like it. So that wig was donated somewhere, and I just learned to live with scarves and wore bandanas at home. I'd have to say this time, having been through it before, I'm much more comfortable with it.
With being bald?
With the baldness. I mean, I did cry. I also have a really good wig this time, and it helps.
Well, and I think people care about their hair, and I think women in particular, hair has so much meaning for us. But I also have to say, I can't see you, Sherry Creek, but when I've seen women who are bald, either maybe as a result of chemotherapy or maybe they just decided to go bald, they look so very, very cool.
They do. The people who opt to do it, you know, if they're not losing their hair, do. Mm-hmm. It's a little hard when you're going through chemo. I have seen some people who look fabulous when I've gone over to NYU, which is where I get mine. But if you also lose your eyebrows and eyelashes, which frequently happens, then it's not so cool. Then you end up looking sick. And I find, you know, a lot of women feel it's not quite shame, but they don't want to be seen outside of their homes when they lose their hair. It is very difficult. Again, I said this before, it makes you vulnerable.
Yeah. But it sounds like for you, you have come to terms with that.
I have. And I have had tremendous support, you know, here at the salon. And, you know, my guys who work here immediately went looking for work. Could I get the best wig? And people have been just really terrific about it.
Well, I have to say, I think salons are places where people get very personal and intimate with each other, whether they're a client there or whether they work there as well.
Yes, that's true. We've had a couple interesting things. There was one day where we had three or four women, I can't remember, come in, as it turned out, for each of them, it was their first time of getting their hair colored.
Right.
You know, your hair can come in very differently after you've gone through chemo, the texture and the color and things like that. And they were all sitting in Sharon's room getting their hair colored, and suddenly there was this very personal conversation going on between them. You know, they were, maybe it was easier because they were strangers, but it, really talking about what the loss of their hair had meant, and how getting your hair colored and trimmed the first time is sort of your first step back to being you, mm-hmm. to feeling normal.
And did you do that where you, when your hair started to come back, did you have it colored?
I did. I went to Sharon. That was how I first met her and how I ended up in this job. I had read about her, and when the hair came back in, I thought, well, now I'm going to try her, and that was it.
And what color did you go?
I'm blonde.
You're blonde. And were you always a blonde? Or
yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So this
not,
is this...
not naturally for a long time, but yes, I was.
Well, let me just reintroduce you, and that's Sherry Creek. She's manager at Sharon Durham Color. That's at the Sally Hershberger Salon,
yes.
in New York. And we called her up after having read about the salon and also about her recently in the New York Times. And we've been talking about going bald in this hour of Radio Times, talking with a Wharton lecturer about some interesting research he's done on men and the workplace and baldness. We're interested in hearing from the women in our audience, or perhaps the men who care about the women in our audience who might be going bald or maybe going through chemotherapy. Do give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Sherry, even going back to this idea of wearing a wig, now clearly your dogs didn't like it, but did it feel uncomfortable for you?
Well, yes. I mean, it never feels quite the same. You know, I mean, I'll be shifting it around, or sometimes it'll move back on my head and I push it forward. I've just gotten, you know, much more comfortable with this is my new normal, mm-hmm. and this is how I live. And I'm just much more accepting of it at this point and not going to let it stop me from doing, you know, I work at a hair salon,
sure.
for heaven's sakes. There's a great irony here.
Well, indeed, yeah. there is, yes. Go ahead.
but I'm much more comfortable with it this time around.
And do people that either clients or other staff that work there, do they know what you have been going through then?
Everybody knows. Everybody knows. When it came up, for the first year when it came back, I was taking oral chemo, and I didn't say anything except to my assistant so he could help cover for me.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the point when I was going to have to lose my hair, when we had to shift to a stronger form of chemo, I took everybody aside and spoke to them privately. And so everybody here knows. And then, you know, as I segued to a wig, a lot of the clients would say things like, God, your hair looks great. I've never seen you. What a good blow dry. Who cuts your hair? And I sort of felt that I had to tell them. Mm-hmm. And in fact, now we're doing an Avon walk, the 35-mile walk. My kids gave this to me for Mother's Day. And members of the salon are walking, and clients are donating money. And people have been very, very supportive.
Well, and that's a wonderful thing. I know men and women going through similar situations, and there's nothing like that kind of support to help you through the dark days as well.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and it makes it real to them. I had one person here when the wig wasn't quite ready. I was wearing scarves in, and which can be very flattering to your face,
sure,
by the way,
sure.
if they're pretty colors, and it freaked him out. He said it was just too real for him.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I think it's hard for other people, too. I think, you know, it's hard on my children when they see me on the weekends. When I take off the wig, I'll just walk around the house. I mean, I think it makes it very real to people.
Sounds like there are also probably some pretty nice wigs being made these days.
Oh, this fellow I go to is unbelievable. I mean, we have sent so many people, that's the other thing, after that article came out, so many people called us for his name. And he's terrific, you know. And yes, I think there can be very mm-hmm. good wigs. And it's nice, you want to go to somebody who is sympathetic and empathetic, somebody who gets it. Because women go in and they're vulnerable, And, you know, there are people who will rip you off. You need somebody who really gets it.
That's Sherry Creek, and joining us on Radio Times to talk about women and going bald. She has gone, I guess, bald, what, twice as a result of chemotherapy, and she is a manager at a salon up in New York City. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Let me get some callers in. We have Lauren from Maniac joining us on Radio Times. Lauren, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi
there.
To actually totally sync in with what you were just talking about, wigs. My mother has owned a wig salon in the Northeast for almost 20 years now that specializes in women with chemotherapy.
Oh, wow.
And you were talking about someone who's sensitive and knowing and what it is like to lose your hair and to get something that makes you feel like yourself again.
Yes.
Because I think that for a lot of these women, they are sick and already so sensitive, and every woman is a little vain.
Yeah.
And even when you're sick, that little bit of having something of you back makes you feel better.
Indeed. Lauren, it sounds like Sherry wants to say something. Go ahead, Sherry.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely correct. I mean, it's been interesting. We have, on occasion, have people come, because they know we've dealt with this, straight from their doctors when they first heard.
Wow.
To get the card. I mean, they can also call in to get the name of the wig person. You know, it makes you feel like yourself. I mean, I can be hanging around. I just came back from a vacation, and during the day it was hot, so I didn't wear the wig. And then at night, when I was going out for dinner, I put it on, and I felt like myself.
Huh.
I mean, I almost feel like my posture changes. You know, it's like, okay, it's me. I'm ready to go.
Lauren, thanks for the call to Radio Times. You can call as well, 1-888-477-9499. Sherry, in thinking of those women that are coming in and having their hair dyed, I mean, it is an opportunity to go do something really crazy. Have you seen women doing that, maybe to say, I'm going to make a really bold statement about my hair?
I haven't. For the most part, they want to be themselves again.
Right.
You know, it's symbolic of going back. In fact, a lot of times... I know with my own self, after my first chemo, when the hair was growing back and was short, many people said to me, oh, it looks great.
Yeah.
But I didn't feel like myself until my hair was long again, and my kids felt the same way.
Because that's how you know what you look like.
Yeah, I think if I'd gone with red or black or, you know, something wild, it wouldn't have reassured anybody.
How are you feeling these days?
I feel great. I feel really good. I have my chemo 2 out of 3 Thursdays, and then I come into work on Friday.
Wow.
And I get tired, and I leave early. But I've been very lucky. I don't get nauseous or some of the other things. I've been fortunate both times through. What I mainly suffer from is fatigue.
Yeah. And I'm sure that there are people that come to the salon knowing that you're there and perhaps feel like they have a kindred spirit there.
Absolutely. Oh, no.
Someone to talk to?
People come right from their doctors and will grab me out in the hallway and start to cry and say, you know, I need help. And it's nice that we're here.
Well, and I'm thinking about oftentimes, you know, meeting strangers in doctor's offices, you can have those intimate conversations.
Yes.
But it's also, as I said before, I think salons are places where people really do get to know each other in very interesting and intimate ways.
Oh, it's like their stylist or colorist or their psychiatrist. You know, I mean, really, as a client, it's sort of a safe place. You're there, you tell them things, and then the mm-hmm. next person comes. You know, and we have particularly found with this,
yeah.
And I think partially because people know I've had it.
And if someone's crying, which is always, you know, is always tugs at your heartstrings, what do you tell them if they have come from the doctor's office to the salon?
Well, generally what I tell them at that point is you're at the absolute scariest part of this.
Right.
Because you're now going to be confronted by choices, and you know you're sick, but you're not moving forward. Once there's a plan, I mean, I always say your biggest obligation is to find the best doctor you can that you feel comfortable with. And don't listen to everybody knows somebody. You know, everybody has advice. You find the best doctor, and then you do what he says to do. And I think once people do that and they're on a path, I mean, I know once I had a bilateral mastectomy, and then the chemo, I felt like I was being proactive.
Huh. Let me see if I can squeeze one more caller in. This
sure.
is Mia from Center City, Philadelphia. And Mia, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I just wanted to say, first of all, I went through chemo 2 years ago for non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, and I was in treatment for about 6 months. I lost all my hair after the first dose, and I went through a lot of the same issues. I was just in shock for a while, and then I really didn't feel like myself until my hair started to come back in, and really until recently when my hair got much longer. But I was a third-grade teacher at the time, and I also have a son who was 3 at the time, and they reacted very differently, my at school and my son at home. My third graders, who I went in to visit wearing a hat, and I explained to them that the medication I was taking was so strong that it made me lose my hair, they were horrified.
Oh, wow.
Absolutely, this was the worst possible scenario. And my son got very upset, a lot like your dogs, and did not want me to cover my head at all. He much preferred me bald.
Oh, that's fascinating, Mia. Well, I appreciate that call to Radio Time. Sherry, we're almost out of time. Any final thoughts from you?
No, I mean, I just think you have to do whatever makes you feel good. And if that's coloring and cutting your hair, if it's a wig, if it's a scarf, how you look makes you feel better.
Indeed. Well, Sherry Creek, thank you so much for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times. We have a new improved page there that you can check out all the various features that we have, including Facebook and Twitter, Tumblr. Again, our new expanded website is whyy.org/Radio Times. Kevin Griffin, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Susan Greenbaum, Patty McMahon, Dennis Devine, and Debbie Builder. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Thank you so much for joining us.